Last week, in the sermon that I gave you, I talked about the times we live in, and some of the things that are ahead in relationship to what's going to happen. And I talked about, basically, how we should be preparing for it and how we can be protected from that period of time and the events that are going to transpire, and how we should be preparing ourselves for it and getting close to God and serving God and putting our trust in God and depending upon Him for the protection and the safety that we're going to need in facing the issues that come up in the prophecies ahead. Well, this week I promised to talk about the economy and prophecy and what the Bible has to say about it. And it's such a big, broad subject, not a broad subject, but such a big subject. There are many, many approaches, I suppose, that could be taken to it. And I was trying to think of the one that would give you the most valuable information for your part and help to educate you so you would understand what is happening in relationship to not only our economy, but the economies of other nations in the world, so that you'll be able to understand what is going on, and so you would be able to prepare for it and face the issues when they do come up. And there are going to be some difficult times ahead in relationship to economy, as well as many other areas that we'll be talking about in prophecy. And we need to understand what is called in this day and age the bottom line of the problem, and see what is going to happen. I have a statement I want to make that I made this morning that sounds strong and takes a lot of thinking on one's part and takes a lot of studying on an individual's part and a lot of unbiased, unprejudiced approach to the subject of the economy and prophecy. And here's the statement. World economies are built to self-destruct. Now, what have I just said? The economies of this world are purposely set up so they won't work. They are purposely set up so they will destroy the nations involved. And that's one basic bottom line point on this, brethren, that we're going to have to realize. There are many books written about economies. I used to read quite a few of those books, but I've gotten to the point now where I'm not even interested in looking at them. I've read books blaming the Rockefellers. I've read books blaming the Jews. I've read books blaming the Japanese. I've read books blaming the Russians. I've read books blaming the Chinese. And whoever else you might want to mention, somebody comes along and realizes that the world's economies have problems. And he looks around for the culprit. The culprit who has brought it about and who is destroying the economies of that particular age or period in time. And the problem with those type books is they don't understand what they're talking about. They don't understand the subject. They just see a problem and they feel that every problem has a human being who is responsible for the problem. And as Mr. Gordon brought out, human beings aren't responsible for those problems in many cases, and that certainly is true of this one. Those books, even though they may pinpoint a particular problem and part of the issue, they don't have the whole answer, brethren, and we need the whole answer. We need to know what the issue is and where the problems are coming from. But in a sermon like this, you don't have the time to go through all the details. But I'm going to give you an overview, and maybe from a point of view that you hadn't thought about. And as you look at not only the economies, but the nations of the world, and just as the nations of the world, there never has been a nation that has existed eternally and grown and progressed in this world. They have all risen and fallen. And that's true of economies too, if you stop and think about it. It's only logical. When a nation comes up, he goes down. Okay, well, when the economies go up, they come down. That's always been true in the 6,000-year history of the world. But man doesn't see an outside force that's causing all of this, and they don't understand an outside force that's causing all of this sort of thing in the economies and in the nations themselves. Man feels that he's directing his own destiny, but man really isn't directing his own destiny. Man is a tool in the hands of Satan the devil, actually, as I'll point out.
And he doesn't even realize it. He doesn't know what the source of the problem is. But brethren, we can. We can know and we can understand if we will listen and if we will let God tell us. And we need to be careful and not minimize the effect that Satan has. Not minimize it, but look at it logically from God's point of view, and we can understand it because the Scriptures explain it to us, and then we can take a look at the society around us, and we can see the fruit of it. And I'll go through some examples today of where the Scriptures have said something, and then where we can take a look at the society, and we can see the fruit of it. And through this process, brethren, we can understand what's going on in world economies and why it's going on and what is going to be the final outcome. We can understand it, frankly, quite clearly. Over in 2 Corinthians, the 11th, second chapter, in the 11th verse, to begin our subject, it says, lest Satan should get advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11. So Paul was saying that we are not ignorant of his devices. Brethren, so it must be an important subject, and it must be a subject that is explained somewhere in the Scriptures. Because Paul said, we are not ignorant of those devices. Well, brethren, we need to be careful and make sure that we're not ignorant of Satan's devices. If we are ignorant of Satan's devices, well, then automatically, since it's obviously revealed in Scripture, and Paul knew about it and knew what his devices were, well, then we can automatically find out. We no longer need to remain in ignorance about it. No matter what the subject may be, we can understand it. Over in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 gives you one of the basic principles that the church teaches concerning Satan. It says, in whom the god of this world, and Satan is the god of this world, the religious leader of this world and the world around us, and I'm going to get into that quite strongly a little later on, and he has blinded the minds of them which believe not. This world doesn't believe God, and as the broadcast brought out last week, Satan has conned them into believing there isn't a devil. The greatest con artist in the history of the human race. He's convinced them that he doesn't exist, you know, to work out his purposes, as we'll find out a little later on. But he's blinded the minds of them that believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, or the good news of the kingdom of God, the message that Christ brought, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. In other words, he's blocking and thwarting the points that God has in giving direction to the human race about his kingdom. And people are purposely blinded by Satan, so they will not understand. In Ephesians, the 6th chapter, a verse that Mr. Gorton used, let's take a look at it again in verse 12. And again, brethren, let's don't argue with the point. This is what God says about the point. Ephesians 6 and verse 12. It says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers. And we're going to read about principalities and powers a little later on. Against the rulers. And we're going to read about rulers a little later on. Of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Satan influences and works through governments to work out his plan and what he is working out here on earth. And what's he going to be doing at the end time? At the end time that we're in now. Let's turn to Revelation 13, a chapter that we're going to be concerned with in this series of prophecy in great detail before I finish the series. I still don't know exactly how many sermons there will be. I think it'll be 4 or 5. But we're going to be into Revelation 13 because it carries a lot of very valuable material. And again, I'm going to pick on words, as you know I am prone to do. It's easy when you read verses to skip some words. And you've read probably Revelation 13 many times, but I want to pick on especially a few words here. Revelation 13, verse 1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw the beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon those horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. So we know this is the famous beast of Revelation, the false prophet. Or not the false prophet, but the beast, the secular power. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power. And so we have this physical human being that comes up as the secular military political leader in the world tomorrow, or not in the world tomorrow, but in the prophecies in the future, And Satan gives him something. He gives him his power. He doesn't have a power of and by himself. Satan gives him his power. Satan gives him his seat. In other words, his governmental position. He is purposely put there by Satan the devil. And Satan gives him his authority, or rulership over other people. And you know, people like to poo-poo prophecy and say, oh, well, that's just so much in prophecy. You don't really understand it. Well, wait a minute. What do you mean we don't understand it? God very plainly says here that Satan the devil is going to give power to a physical human being. And that Satan the devil is going to give him his government. And that Satan the devil is going to give him his authority. And either he is or he isn't. God says he is. Human beings says he isn't. I learned a long time ago they were liars, not God. If God says that's going to happen in the future, and the book of Revelation is the future, if God says that's going to happen, it's going to happen. And we assume that most of you sitting here in this room are going to live to see and know by name the individual that is directly being guided and motivated by Satan the devil and given that sort of power and that sort of government and that sort of authority. It's not a matter of our interpretation. It's a matter of statement of fact right here in the book of Revelation. I would go on to verse 11, and it talks about another beast coming up. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. You know, the world has its concept of Satan the devil, and we have tonight, you know, and all of the falterol that's going to go on in relationship to Halloween. My sister, you know, younger sister and her husband arrived yesterday, and they're going to be, they're at home now, actually. They're not in the church, but they're very sympathetic to not what we believe, but they like us as relatives. And we're going to sneak home, you know, around 5 or 5:30 after we get through the fellowship here at church, and they're going to be all ready, and we're going to jump into the car, and we're going to go down to Stuart Anderson's, and we're going to miss all this falterol. And I told him, we don't give anything to these kids for begging, and it's a wrong principle. And so we're going to be doing that tonight and getting away from all of this foolishness. Satan has taught the world that he's like that. And, you know, he's that sort of individual. He's that sort of personality. And like Mr. Gordon said, you know, he's red with that funny tail and the pitchfork in his hand. No, he's not. No, he doesn't look like that. He doesn't even act like that. Satan the devil would not touch Halloween with a 10-foot pole. He wouldn't have a thing to do with it. He doesn't even believe in Halloween. He knows Christmas is wrong. He doesn't celebrate it either. Satan isn't that way at all. The Bible tells you what Satan's like. Just hold your finger there and go to 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, and you'll find out what Satan's like. He's a nice guy, according to him. According to 1 Satan 2:12. He's a nice guy. Here's what he comes like. Why, you can't fight a guy like this. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 13 and 14. It says, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. Don't be surprised if false apostles claim they're apostles of Christ. Don't be surprised at that, because their boss, Satan himself, is transformed into an angel of light. He's a good guy. He wears a white hat. He didn't wear a black hat. He wears a white hat. He wouldn't go around begging. No, Satan comes like a lamb, like it says, or his representative in Revelation 13, verse 11. Revelation 13, verse 11 says, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb. He looked like an apostle of Christ, but he spoke like Satan the devil. He hid the truth of the good news of the kingdom of God from the world and focuses on himself and on being a good guy, and on loving the human race and loving everybody and being against sin and, you know, and all of this sort of thing. Feed the poor, you know, take from the rich and give to the poor. You know, he'd pass for that guy who used to wander around in the woods in England. What was his name? Robin Hood? Something like that. Well, at any rate, Satan appears that way. And this false prophet is going to appear that way. And he exercises all the power of the first beast. Well, who sponsored the power of the first beast? Satan the devil, before him, and caused the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And so he causes the earth to worship that first beast. And so coming into the future, you not only have a secular military political leader directed and guided and motivated by Satan the devil, but you have a counterpart. You have a counterpart posing as an apostle of Jesus Christ who is being motivated and guided and directed by Satan the devil. And there really is going to be a religious leader come along who is going to pose in that garb. And then in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, it tells you another thing about this particular physical human being. 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, beginning in verse 1, this particular individual. 2 Thessalonians 2, beginning in verse 1. Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit nor word, by the letter, nor by letter as from us, as at the day of Christ is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. A singular individual, again picking on words, a singular individual who is called the son of perdition, and is called that man of sin. And here's what he does. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So that false prophet, posing as a lamb, yet being motivated by Satan, is going to proclaim himself God. But you know, it's kind of like Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. There really is nothing new under the sun. There's one individual back in Ezekiel, the 28th chapter, that called the posed as God and proclaimed himself God. And it's interesting, the story. Let's go back to Ezekiel 28. Most of the time when we use this particular chapter, we use a section that talks about Satan the devil, and rightly so. But I want to begin at the beginning of this chapter because there's some interesting things there. I have to keep my voice oiled. Ezekiel, the 28th chapter, beginning in verse 1. There's some fascinating statements, again picking on words. But the word of the Lord came again unto me, saying, Son of man, say to the prince of Tyre, the prince of Tyre. Now Tyre was one of the major, if you go back into history, and this goes back to about 580, 86, 87 to 600 B.C. In other words, about 500-600 years before Christ. And there was a city by the name of Tyre. Tyre sat on the Mediterranean coast, and it had deep sea portage, one of the few on the Mediterranean coast that was available to the world in that day and age. And it was the major trading center for the known world at that time. All major trading went in and out of Tyre to the rest of the world. And it literally controlled the business of all of the worlds, the known part of the world, at that particular time. So Tyre was a business center and a major center. And the world has a lot of deep sea ports in this day and age. But in that day and age, Tyre was a major one. And so let's, with that in mind, we have a prince of Tyre, a leader of Tyre. Thus says the Lord God, because your heart is lifted up, and because you have said, I am a God, I sit in the seat of God, in the midst of the seas, yet you are a man and not God, though you set your heart as the heart of God. That's why I said there's nothing new under the sun. The guy coming up in the future that's going to proclaim himself God is not the first one. And undoubtedly this was not the first one. But here's one who proclaimed himself as God, who sat in as a leader, as a king or the prince of Tyre, the major trading capital of the world, and controlled the world trade, actually. Tyre controlled world trade. And he, in the process, controlled world trade. Notice what God said about him in the third verse here in this chapter. He says, behold, referring to this king of Tyre, you are wiser than Daniel. There's no secret that they can hide from you. God inspired Ezekiel to tell this man that he was wiser than Daniel. You see, Daniel was alive at this time. Daniel was a captive in Babylon. Daniel was in favor with Nebuchadnezzar and was on his process, in the process of becoming an advisor to the king of Babylon, and carried on his advisorship on into the Mede and the Persian Empire. And he was a political leader in the Babylonian and the Persian Empire. You read the story of Daniel. And yet God inspired Ezekiel to say, look, king of Tyre, you're wiser than Daniel. You know, that's saying quite a lot, isn't it? This guy's surprising God say that about his servant, that a king of Tyre, who proclaimed himself God, was wiser than Daniel. It's interesting. Hold your finger there and go to Luke 16. This is a parable that's one of those that's a real tongue twister. Quite frankly, it's difficult to be understood. And I learn something more about it every time I go through it. I still am not sure that I've gotten all the details. But this is a parable in Luke 16 of the unjust steward. If you read the story, if you're familiar with the parable, we have a guy here who was cheating his boss. His boss found out about it and was going to fire him. He was going to fire him and then maybe even put him in prison. He found out before his boss fired him that his boss knew about it. He says, what am I going to do? He says, I've never done a day's work in my life, and I'm not about to start now. And I won't beg. I'm too ashamed of that. My vanity won't let me beg. How am I going to get out of this mess? He said, well, my boss has got a lot of creditors, a lot of people that owe him money. He says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go around to these guys, and since I've been responsible for handling his money, I'll tell them, you cut your bill in half. You cut your bill in half. And I'll present that to my boss, and then you'll only have to pay him half as much. But if I do that, you realize what he's doing, he's getting them across the barrel. And so when he gets fired, he says, if I do that, when I get fired, they've got to provide for me, and I just don't have to work or beg. So he'd come up with a con job in order to preserve his hide. And here was God's comment about that. Verse 8. You say, well, that doesn't sound very godly to me. Still doesn't sound very godly to me. But in verse 8, the Lord commended the unjust steward. He says, that's a pretty smart deal. I mean, not everybody would think about doing that. Even the crooks, a lot of crooks wouldn't come up with that kind of scheme. And especially be able to pull it off. He says, you're pretty wise. You're pretty smart. You protected yourself. He says, because he had done wisely. And then notice what he says. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. You know, we're taught not to think that way, aren't we? We're taught not to be crooked. We're taught not to lie. We're taught not to cheat. We're taught not to steal. And if we were in danger of being fired, we'd just be fired and take the consequences. That's not too sharp if you're going to deal with the world. That's not too sharp if you're going to deal with the world. In the world's way, this guy was smarter than we are. But you see, we can't deal in the world's way. We can't do business the world's way. That's sometimes why we have difficulties. Because they're allowed to do things because they got a different God than we are. And they get further at it, too, if they're smart. And so we find over here in Ezekiel 28, verse 3, that God just plain told this through Ezekiel, this king of Tyre who proclaimed himself God, he says, you're smarter than Daniel is. Because Daniel got himself in a lion den, you didn't. Daniel got thrown into, you know, all sorts of problems, and you didn't. You're smarter than Daniel is. Well, where did his wisdom come from? Let's go on, and we'll pick it up in verse 17, but we'll come back a bit. We'll see where the king of Tyre was getting his wisdom. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty, referring to Satan, as we'll get into a little later on. You have corrupted your reason, your wisdom, by the reason of your brightness. I will cast you to the ground and will lay you before kings that they may behold you. And this is referring to Satan, as we'll get into a little later on. So this king of Tyre was being motivated and guided and directed by Satan the devil, the god of this world. And just as this end time leader is going to be. All right, now let's see where and how the king of Tyre, motivated by Satan the devil, operated. and where he functioned, and what exhibited this wisdom. How did he use this wisdom from Satan? Verse 4 of Ezekiel 28. With your wisdom and with your understanding, you have gotten you money and gold and silver into your treasures. In other words, using Satan's approach, using Satan's way in business and in merchandising and in that sort of thing, in the economy, he'd gotten himself rich. He knew how to use society. He knew how to use society as a tool of Satan, as a representative of Satan. He knew how to use society in order to get rich and to gain goods and to gain power, to gain authority, just as that guy at the end time is going to be given his seat and his authority and his power, because Satan knows how to do it. He knows how to maneuver, he knows how to handle it, and he orchestrates the whole situation in working with those in governmental positions. He causes them to build up a society that is going to self-destruct. He causes them to build up an economy that is going to self-destruct. Because it's like Christ said in the book of Matthew, a nation divided against itself cannot stand. And Satan is the god of all the governments of this world. And so he's not out to preserve one above another. He's out to destroy them all. He puts them at odds with each other. There is no system that man has devised in 6,000 years that's right, that works. They've all come and gone because they've got the same author. And his motivation is to destroy them, not to build them up. Let's go on and see that. By your great wisdom and by your traffic or your business, you have increased your riches, and your heart is lifted up because of your money, because of your power, because of your authority. Here he controlled all the world's economies because it all had to come through one city. And he made himself rich through the way he maneuvered people and governments and economies and money. He got rich at it because he was dealing and sponsored by the individual who knows how to do it, and the individual is behind it, Satan the devil. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, because you have set your heart as the heart of God, behold, therefore, I will bring strangers upon you, the terrible of the nations, and they will draw their swords against the beauty of your wisdom, and they shall defile your brightness. What happened to the king of Tyre? What happened to the king of Tyre and the nation of Tyre, or the city of Tyre? That's virtually all it was. The Babylonians couldn't destroy it. It isn't because they didn't have the military power. It isn't because it was so defended, but it's because in the process they would have destroyed their own country. They would have destroyed themselves in the process if they had destroyed the world's economy. Well, comes along with the Medes and the Persians, the same story. They were landlocked in the area east of the Mediterranean, and Tyre was the only area through which they could ship their goods to the rest of the world. Okay, if they go in and destroy Tyre, what happens? They can't ship their goods anymore. Business goes out the window. Well, Alexander comes wandering in from the west, not landlocked by the east. He came wandering in from Greece, and they've got several good ports. He came wandering in and wandered over the area, and he didn't stop with Tyre. He tore it all to pieces, and that was the end of it. But who motivated the Babylonians? Satan. Why didn't they go in and destroy it? Because they would destroy themselves in the process. Okay, the Medes and the Persians. Who was guiding them? Satan. And why did they go in and didn't they go in? Because they would have destroyed themselves in the process. This is a matter of history, actually. You read it in history books. Alexander comes along and he could have cared less. And so Satan came up against Satan, and Satan destroyed the system, and the Greeks introduced world commerce and world system. And then the Romans came along after that. They put down the Greeks, and they introduced their system. The Romans were put down. The Arabs come in. They were next in line. And so they introduced their system, and it was put down. On and on the story goes, you know. The story just keeps going on and repeating itself. A system comes up, a system goes down, and it's always a stranger that comes in and destroys the system. And the stranger represents the same individual that they represent, and they don't even realize it. They don't even understand what's going on. He's playing musical chairs with them. He really is. He's playing musical chairs with them, and in the process he destroys every system he brings into power. Because he's out to destroy them all. I'll show you a little later on. It's a fascinating story when you really look at it. And you look at history, that's what's happened. It's up and down, up and down, up and down. Nations rise, come to power, money, you know, control of government, and control of economies. Another nation rises up and destroys them. Then another nation rises up and destroys them, just up and down like a yo-yo. They shall bring you down to the pit, and you shall die the deaths of them that are slain in the midst of the seas. Will you say there, will you yet say before him that slays you, I am God? He says, you could still call yourself God? This guy we talked to about in Thessalonians, he's going to meet the same match. It talks about what's going to happen to him too. And here this guy, he comes crashing down. And is he going to proclaim himself God when he dies? Not really. But you shall be a man and know God in the hand of him that slays you. You shall die the deaths of the uncircumcised or the strangers. In other words, some strange nation, some foreign nation is going to come in by the hand of a stranger. For I have spoken it, said the Lord of hosts. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyre, and say unto him, Thus says the Lord God, you seal up the sum full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Now, I'm still talking about the king of Tyre, but then he gets into talking about a different situation, a different type of an individual. And this is obviously not talking about the king himself, but talking about the power that is motivating him, Satan the devil, as we'll see in a minute. He says, you seal up the sum full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You have been in Eden, the garden of God. Now, the king of Tyre was not in the garden of Eden. The garden of Eden had been destroyed about 2,000 or 3,000 years before that. The king of Tyre was not in the Garden of Eden, but who was? Satan. Satan was in the Garden of Eden. Every precious stone was your covering, your sardis, topaz, and the diamond, and so on. In the day that you were created, a created being, not the king of Tyre any longer, Satan. You are the anointed cherub that covers. I have set you so. You was upon the holy mountain of God. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones. You was perfect in the ways from the day that you were created till iniquity or sin was found in you. Notice what his sin was. Notice what the iniquity was. By the multitude of your merchandise. Business. Satan was a businessman. A crooked businessman. That had crooked goals. He was made God of this world. He was not satisfied with that and the riches that pertained to this world. He wanted the universe. He wanted to expand his power, his government, and his authority, and his riches. He wanted to do it, and he was willing to do it any way possible. And you have filled the midst of you in violence. If you have the motivation of expansion and greed at others' expense, and power and authority at others' expense, and are willing to be violent, to lie, to cheat, to steal, no matter what it takes in order to get it, you're patterned after Satan the devil. And all of the governments and all of the economies in the world since man came along have been patterned after that, to get, and the greed, and the lust, and the power. And they get it, and somebody else comes along with the same motivation, and what happens? They get chopped down. And that's what really has happened to the United States. The United States has grown, especially since 1940, at a prodigious rate. I don't think we even realize how powerful the United States is, insofar as economies are concerned. We're kind of like the tire of Ezekiel 28. In the power that we have. Do you know that Americans, after World War II and on into the 50s and 60s and the early 70s, actually manufactured somewhere around 70% of all the world's manufactured goods, of all the nations? And you know that the United States, through those years, consumed somewhere in the neighborhood of 55 or 56% of all the world's natural resources and all the world's manufactured goods. 250 million people, with a world of over 3.5 billion, 250 million consumed over half of all the manufactured goods. They had 90-some percent of all the telephones in the world. It's amazing It's amazing the power that the United States was given and the money that the United States was given. And you know, that just can't go on. We're going to have our enemies out there. And it's gotten to the point now where, since World War II, and it's eroding now, but after World War II, there would not have dared, any nation in the world would have not dared attack the United States. They would not have dared to, no matter how much they rattle their swords, no matter how much they claim they're going to declare war, no matter what they say, they would not have dared to do it, because they would have destroyed the world's economies in the process. They would have destroyed themselves in the process, even if they hadn't. Even the United States had never fired a shot. Because their economies and the economies of the entire world flowed through the United States. Japan, even today, 38% of everything they manufacture is sold to you and I. 38%. Now, what if Japan were to attack the United States and destroy us? What would happen? They would automatically lose 38% of their markets. They would automatically go into a tailspin and a recession that is questionable whether they would ever come out of it. Do you know that 75 to 80% of Canada's trade is between Canada and the United States? Europe comes along with about 25 to 30% of everything they manufacture is bought by an American. They wouldn't dare destroy us. They've got to prop us up. They have to prop us up. But in the process, the United States has gotten to the point where they consume more than they're able to manufacture and sell. We have an enormous national debt that's impossible to pay off. We're lucky if we can pay the interest on the national debt. Say anything about the debt itself. The balance of trade is getting so weird that the United States is now the greatest debtor nation in of all the nations in the world. And in fact, our national debt to other countries is bigger than all the others put combined. In other words, they're propping up a loser. And somewhere along the line, brethren, somewhere along the line, the modern day tyre is going to meet up with a power that is going to be like Alexander the Great and is going to destroy the economy of the world as we know it today in the West. They're going to. It's just as simple as that. Satan's motivation, as he says in Isaiah 14, Isaiah the 14th chapter, Satan's motivation is not to build up a nation. His motivation is to weaken a nation. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground? Isaiah 14 and verse 12. Which did weaken the nations? Which did weaken the nation? And again, you see the hand mark of Satan. Revelation 6:17, beginning in verse 12. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour of the beast. So we have that system building up. They have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. They shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they are with him are called and chosen and faithful. So they fight Christ at his second coming. Then notice what 15 and 16 and 17 says. You know, it's ironic how things work. And he said unto me, the waters which you saw, where the whore sits, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, or the religious section of it, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So the system is going to be divided, and the secular system is going to destroy the church. And the church is the one that brought them to power in the first place. Satan's going to be fighting against himself. Because you got the one guy who's the beast, who's running the military and the government, and he's going to fight against the one who acted like a lamb and yet spoke as a dragon. He's going to fight against him and destroy him. Who's motivating the beast? The secular part? Satan the devil. Who's motivating the religious part? Satan the devil. Incredible, isn't it? The mentality, the thought process that Satan has. He intends to destroy or weaken the nations. The world is not structured to last. The world is not structured to be preserved. The world is structured to self-destruct. Satan would love nothing more than to see the entire human race erased off this earth. Why? Because human beings are heirs to the kingdom of God. Human beings can become sons of God. He can't. He can't. And he consequently has structured a system that is out to destroy the human race. Revelation 18 talks about that system. And you read Revelation 18 very carefully, and it talks about money. Interesting. Notice verse 11 of Revelation 18. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. The system is going to self-destruct. And what is it going to hurt? Who's going to do all the bawling and the crying and the weeping and the moaning and the groaning over it? The ones who are broke. They're going to be jumping out of windows and off bridges because the stock market just collapsed. And it was built to collapse. From the very foundation, the whole system is built to collapse. And this is going to be the final collapse. And everybody's going to moan and groan. And the merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and all of that sort of thing, and the fruit that their soul lusted after are departed from you. And all things which were dainty and goodly are departed from you, and you shall find them no more at all. And the merchants of these, which were made rich by her, shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment and weeping and wailing. The whole system's going to come tumbling down. And you know, brother, we really can see it. We can see it. And that's why it says in verse 4 of Revelation 18, just come out of her, my people. Look. Look at what it's all constructed on. Look at who's guiding and directing and motivating it. Look at its foundation, and look what's going to happen to it. And he says, get out of the system. I hope that none of you lost any money on the stock market. I really do. I don't imagine any of you had any. If you're like me, I wouldn't know the first thing on how to buy stock. Now, maybe that's stupidity on my part, but at least I didn't lose any money on it. And when the gold went to $800 and then dropped to $350, I didn't lose any gold either. Now, I was in Australia, and I didn't have any gold, and neither did any of the Australians I knew had any gold. My son-in-law, I'll tell a story on him. He had sold a house in Regina, or in Saskatchewan, I should say, before he went to Australia, and he had a little money that he'd made a little bit on the house. I think it was a couple thousand dollars, something like that, and he bought silver. And it was at $12 or $13 an ounce. And zoom, you know what happened? The Hunts run it up to $22 an ounce. And he was telling me, well, Dean, you should buy silver. And I didn't have any money, but should buy silver. I said, Craig, that can come down just as fast as it went up. And so he held on. He says, oh, no, it's going to go up to $50 an ounce. I said, don't you believe it. It's down to $5. When he finally got rid of it, he sold it for $5. You know, but after all, God said that the people of this world are wiser in their generation than my son-in-law. Because my son-in-law is a very converted man. And they are. They are. I like to tease him about it. I do it very cautiously because I want to keep good, close family relations. But I just couldn't help but shake my head. And, you know, the system, brethren, it's going to fall apart. It really is. And as we sit and watch, if we just listen, and if we just read God's Word, you can tell when it's going to fall apart. But you know, there's going to be a system replace this. There's going to be a system replace this. And we're to be praying about it. Matthew 6, verse 10 says, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. When Christ comes back, there's going to be another kingdom established. And what's going to happen? They're going to establish a political government, but they're going to establish an economy as well. Let's take a look in the book of Zechariah when Christ comes back. Zechariah, the 14th chapter. And we'll just take verse 1. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, and your spoils shall be divided in the middle of you. In other words, the day that Jesus Christ comes back. Verse 5 says, and the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with him. We know that Jesus Christ is coming back. He's going to replace that system that finally is the one of Revelation 18, where the whole thing falls apart. Where the whole thing falls apart. And so Jesus Christ is going to come back with his saints. Verse 14 tells you what he's going to do with the money around the world and the riches around the world. And Judah shall also fight in Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together, gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. All the riches of the nations around the world are going to be gathered together in the city of Jerusalem. Isaiah the 60th chapter, the whole chapter, talks about how that's all going to come to pass and how that's going to happen. Isaiah 60, beginning in verse 1. Arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and the gross darkness the people. But the Lord shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you. And the Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together, they come to you. Your son shall come from far, and your daughter shall be nursed at your side. Then shall you see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged, because of the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto you. And the forces of the Gentiles shall come to you. The multitude of camels shall cover you. The dromedaries of Midian and Ephah, all they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of God. In other words, they'll bring all their gold and all of their riches. Verse 17 says, for brass I will give you gold, for iron I will bring silver, and for wood brass, and for stones iron, and I will also make your officers peace and your exactors righteousness. So out of the ashes of this world and the Roman Empire, out of those ashes is going to arise another empire. Will arise another empire. This one's going to be ruled over by Jesus Christ. There's going to be one, at least one, I'm sure there'll be many other, unique differences. Revelation 20 tells you one unique difference in that system. Revelation 20, verse 1. And I saw an angel come down from heaven having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should not deceive the nations any more, till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he's going to be loosened a little season. Satan is going to be bound. The author, the God of this world, the author of this world's economies, is going to be bound and no longer allowed to interfere or establish or to deal in the economies of the world. But there's going to be a new economy. It's going to be set up by Jesus Christ. It's going to emanate from Jerusalem, and it's going to be a totally different structure, and it's going to have a different result. The result of that economy and that merchandising structure and that government structure is talked about in Isaiah the 9th chapter. We'll close here, Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7. For unto us a child is born, Jesus Christ. Unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Notice, we talked about these other governments and how Satan weakened the nations. How his motivation was destruction, not construction. And he destroyed those that he brought up. Purposely he destroyed them. His motivation was to destroy, not to build up. And notice, of the increase of Christ's government and peace, there shall be no end. We're going to have an economic structure that's going to arise and a government that is going to rise that is going to have peace for eternity, and there's not going to be any end to it. It is going to last forever. It is not going to be up and down. And upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it, to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. And that's what's going to happen. We're going to see a whole new economy. Now, next time, I want to go through the major nations that are going to be involved in all of these prophecies, and go through and show you the nations that are going to be involved in the prophecies that lead up to the final destruction of this world's governments and Satan and all of that sort of thing. I want to go through the nations and go through and show you what happens to them. Now, that's a tall order for one sermon, but I'll try to make it. I'm giving you an overview. I think I probably should have created all sorts of questions today with this sermon, individual questions, but I knew it would. I wanted it, too. I like to give sermons where I don't give you all the answers. I like to create questions because it causes you to think about what? God and His Word. And if I can create questions where you don't have any time to think about anything else, I'm doing more than doing my job. Because we have too much time to think about other things. And so I don't mind creating questions. I enjoy creating questions. and I'll try my best to answer them. But in the sermon that follows, I'll create more. And that's what I'll do with this overview of the nations. I'm going to create some questions, I know that. But I'm doing that intentionally. And then in the final two sermons, or one sermon, I want to use that chart business that I warned you about in Bible study. And I want to show you how to begin to fill it in, and where Daniel 12 fits in this whole picture, and how you're going to be able to know when the time comes, and what actions you need to take in relationship to your protection and being aware of what's going to happen in these prophecies as near as we possibly can from the scriptures. And so we'll leave that one for the economy, and we'll pick up next week with our subject on prophecy.